second reading comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, verses 25 to 33. Now large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete this task? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." The Gospel of the Lord. I know I'm not going out on a limb when I say that we are in an unusual time for this thing we call the human race. And we Presbyterians are a rather well-informed, pretty well-educated lot, so I can say with certainty that you know about global crises like climate change, terrorism, and refugees fleeing conflicts in their home countries. National crises like the widening gap between rich and poor, the inability for middle class incomes to cover all the bills and also send children to college like could be done in the 1970s. The healthcare crisis that has been postponed by the Affordable Care Act, the inability of people to retire, the decrease in our life expectancy, an increase in infant mortality, an increase in obesity, a crazy presidential election that still has 2 months to go, pollution sites that leach their poisons into our food and water supply. Many of us would say that we are facing more problems than our forebears. It sure seems like it would have been much better for Jesus to have been born now rather than in that idyllic past when life was simple and things were not so crazy. And I wonder what could be different. We know that the words of Jesus' birth, the words of his birth were started by saying, "Do not be afraid." And yes, these are words we need to hear at a time like this. Yet, does it matter how these words come to us, read from the Bible, for live and in person, as long as we are told not to be afraid? See, the hard part is not being afraid. It's not easy. And what makes it especially difficult is there is an entire industry whose profit margin goes up when we are all afraid. There are entire companies dedicated to reminding us of all we should be afraid of. So we get advertisements and Facebook postings and emails and snail mail messages that say, in short, be afraid. Yet, we know that we have been given something to do, something to focus upon instead of what frightens us, something that can keep our eyes on the prize, can move us to trust, to embrace our common humanity, to bring us together to create a better world. In the church, we call it building the kingdom of God. It is a promised time that will feature justice and fairness and compassion and joy and sharing and beauty and love instead of fear and distrust. All through the Gospels, Jesus calls those who have ears to hear, which is a clever way of referring to his followers and all those who could or should be his followers. Those who have ears to hear, come create loving systems of forgiveness and sharing and hope and trust that will take the place of the oppressive system that ruled the lives of the people even in Jesus' day. This kingdom would have a small rich-poor gap, have no need for nuclear weapons. God's kingdom would advocate for international disputes to be settled without conflict, exploitive arrangements in the production of food and products would end. Now, Jesus knew that this would not come quickly or easily. And we believe that the kingdom was launched with Jesus' life, but has not fully arrived. To realize it fully requires undivided attention, focus. You cannot be swayed from building it by the needs of family or be distracted by the allure of acquiring possessions. Such things slow everything down. Jesus wanted followers that were fed up with the way things are under the empire and are looking for a better way to live. People who want a life with a purpose. Unfortunately, many of his potential followers have gotten sidetracked. Instead of a high focus on what Jesus actually said and taught and told his followers to do, many adherents to Christianity have gotten distracted by other competing things. Instead of building a kingdom, some of his followers say it is essential that women not be clergy or not be given control over their own bodies. Some in other churches are saying that global warming can't happen because God won't let it. Some are saying that instead of building God's kingdom, we should spend our precious time holding down people who are the wrong color or are in love with the wrong gender or in favor of tolerating other faiths and so on. Instead of fear, do you want to have shalom? A way of life that is steeped in the deep love of God. You want to make the world a better place instead of scapegoating immigrants for the problems created by corporate greed. Do you want it so bad that you can taste it, so bad you'll set aside other things? Yes, today's problems are big, but so were the problems that surrounded Jesus. At a time such as this, disciples of Jesus of Nazareth must not take the easy road. It is tempting to just put up with the current degree of human misery, to just go along and get along. But Jesus calls us to do more, not less. To be driven and passionate for creating a society more like what Jesus envisioned. Slow to judge and punish, quick to help and share. Yet some of his followers have been able to convince our society that Jesus was actually a judgmental hater, a person who wanted women in their place, despite what Luke 8 says. Some of his followers use Jesus as a way to justify their own materialism, insisting that Jesus was actually a wealthy guy who also respected racial separation. These same folk are often those who take the Bible literally. I have never, ever, ever heard a biblical literalist bring up verse 33 in today's text. Nor have I heard discussion of the year of Jubilee, the debt forgiveness passage that was read earlier. Those who believe every bit of the Bible is completely true in its literal reading are quick to bring up the text. They believe others are violating it. Sanctimoniously point a finger, but they avoid this one. When was the last time you saw a TV preacher with no possession? Many of them present a life of lavish living as if that is proof of God's blessing, even though Jesus taught the opposite. Doesn't that make their lavish living proof of disobedience? Some have private jets. Some have gold faucet fixtures. I've seen several proponents of the blame the poor for their poverty school of thought, folk that have never missed a meal in their lives, point a finger and say, well, if these people would just sin less often, all would be well for them, and they'd be rich like me. Even though that would put them in violation of Jesus' teaching here. Jesus said, blessed are the poor. He didn't say, blessed are the poor once they become rich. Well, unfortunately, our nation believes that this hateful and greedy understanding of the Christian faith is accurate. Recent polling shows that for many Americans, to be a Christian has become synonymous with intolerance and racism and greed. The widespread nature of this false understanding of what Jesus said and did has led people to decide that God must want the poor to be poor, the rich to be rich, and the oppressed to be oppressed. This is just as inaccurate a way to portray Jesus' teachings as it is to say that all Muslims are terrorists. This has led many to decide that Christianity is not for them. It has become quite difficult for those who advocate for what Jesus actually valued to be heard in our society. And if this portrait of Jesus is news for any of you, then that just proves my point. Yes, Jesus sets a pretty high bar here. And it shows all of us how important the kingdom of God should be to us. It was certainly important to Jesus. It's the topic he talked about the most. And while Jesus is making a strong demand in this passage, we know he also represents the God of second chances, the God of forgiveness. So stay focused on building a better world. Yes, you have a family, and yes, you must attend to them, but make sure you come back to building the kingdom. Yes, you need a few possessions, but don't let them make you wander away from the church and away from building the kingdom. Decide how much being a disciple may demand of you, how much it may cost you, and then pick up that hammer, pick up that rally poster, and join in the Moral Mondays event tomorrow morning. Drop off that bag of canned goods, write that letter to your elected representatives, join the vigil against gun violence, protest the tax breaks for the already wealthy. Grab that paintbrush. Get yourself educated on what Jesus really said. Visit that lonely widower. Use that daily devotional book and build your friendship with the real Jesus. Tell your neighbor about WageMark and support that farmer or business that pays a fair wage to their workers. Scoop that soup, tutor that child, vote that politician out that is awash in corporate funding and legislates accordingly. Invite that discouraged friend to not give up and to instead invite her or him to come to church with you. Next week, as Education Hour begins, it would be a great Sunday to do that. Jesus is calling us to build the kingdom and then rest and recharge here together in God's arms on Sunday. Yes, we have work to do. Will you roll up your sleeves and join in? You see, even at a time like this, disciples don't take the easy road.